Good afternoon. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our next guest you may know, especially if you are a regular Wisconsin Public Radio listener or an avid reader. James Campbell's new book is Heart of the Jaguar, the extraordinary conservation effort to save the America's legendary cat. You may also know James from his previous works, Braving It, which was featured on Chapter a Day, read by Norman Gilliland. The Final Frontiersman was a Chapter a Day special that was read by Jim Fleming. And James has joined Larry Mueller on this show before for his other books, The Ghost Mountain Boys and The Color of War. James Campbell, welcome back to The Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
And I'm so glad I get to talk to you for this book, The Heart of the Jaguar, because I am a cat lover and I did not even realize how much... I didn't know anything about the jaguar. I didn't know that it used to be in the United States. I didn't know that it's still struggling to exist in Central and South America. What got you into the story of the Heart of the Jaguar?
Well, I guess I've always been fascinated with big cats. And in 1991, I was living in a small mountain town of 200 people above Boulder, Colorado, called Jamestown, and I was going to graduate school, and I read Alan Rabinowitz's work. He's the guy I write about in this book. His book was called Jaguar, and I was bowled over by it. It was about his 2 years in the Belize jungle studying jaguars, and Rabinowitz was a force of nature. He was fierce and fearless and iron-willed and lion-hearted, and he was very much like the jaguar. In fact, he said later on in his life that in order to write about and study and save jaguars, he had to be part jaguar himself.
It sounds so much like Jane Goodall and primates.
Very, very much. Yeah, he immersed himself in the jaguar territory down in Belize. He tracked them, he was tracked by them, he captured and collared them, and in the process, he amassed what is probably the most intimate and thorough record of the jaguar ever recorded.
I guess what surprised me, James, is how contemporary this all is. Alan Rabinowitz is somebody from our time, that this isn't... This is relatively new research, and the previous research into jaguars all seem to come from hunters or predators.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He did the first research in the rainforest. A guy named George Schaller, whose name I'm sure you know, was his mentor and his boss at the New York Zoological Society. And Rabinowitz also studied in the Pantanal of Brazil, where George Schaller had started a study of jaguars. But it was very different territory than the Belize jungle. And the Pantanal is 42 million acres. Oof. It's the largest wetland in the world. And Alan Rabinowitz, kind of a funny story, he was chomping at the bit to go to the Pantanal, and he got down there, and he just immersed himself in jaguar studies. And he learned, much to his horror, irony of ironies, that he was allergic to wild cats. So the man who would go on to be the most preeminent big cat researcher in the world was allergic to wild cats. It made him break out in hives. It made his nose run. It constricted his throat. So he didn't know what to make of that. But of course, his commitment never wavered.
Just for the record, as PJ Leash was exiting in the last hour, our guest from the last hour, meeting James Campbell for the first time, PJ said right out, "I've read Alan Rabinowitz's work. I have been to Belize where he had done his research."
Yeah.
That this goes beyond just big cats, James. This goes to the story of conservation. This goes to protecting the habitat we have for ourselves and we share with others.
Yeah, that's right. So he also studied clouded leopards. He studied tigers. He studied lots of big cats. But as he said, the jaguar was the animal closest to his heart. And he studied big cats all around the world, but the jaguar was really where he made his mark. And he started a group called Panthera, which was an environmental nonprofit. He started that in conjunction with a man named Tom Kaplan. They wanted to be the Manhattan Project for big cats. And actually, Tom Kaplan brought him to Panthera and said that Alan Rabinowitz was the charismatic megafauna of his generation. The greatest brand name in big cat research and big cat conservation.
Well, the thing about your story, James Campbell, is you follow in the footsteps of Alan Rabinowitz. You go to many of these places and have the same experiences. The way you write about your first experience of seeing a jaguar is it's stressful. It's like you're looking everywhere for it, and then all of a sudden, it appears. And then all that stress sort of disappears, and there is this peaceful calm that takes place just as a result of the experience or just because of the jaguar. What was it when you first saw the jaguar in the wild?
Yeah, I was in the Brazilian Pantanal with a group from Panthera, and we were motoring in a boat down the Cuiabá River, which is kind of like the Kruger National Park of jaguars. They started a jaguar ecotourism effort down there in the early 90s, early 2000s, which has really blossomed. So we were motoring down the river, and we were scrutinizing the riverbank, and all of a sudden the boat captain slowed. And I looked off to my left, and I saw this jaguar laying under this tree. And then the boat pilot cut the motor, and he turned to us, and he said, "Onça." So Panthera onça is the Latin name or scientific name for the jaguar. But in Brazil, they just use onça. And then we came to stop, and he slowly let the anchor rope out, and we sat there and we looked at the jaguar, and this jaguar just laying there, you know, not perturbed in any way, unconcerned about us. And we were about 40 feet off the riverbank, and then all of a sudden he rose, and he rose so beautifully, so gracefully and fluidly, not like a dog happily jumping up, wagging the tail, hanging the tongue out. He just rose like it was like, I think I say it was something, it was like music.
Yes.
Like Steve Rinella, I did the Meat Eater podcast, and he said it rose like a runway model, which is so beautiful. And, you know, every muscle in concert. And then he got up and he came down to the river and he drank at the river. And again, it was as if he hadn't a care in the world and he wasn't worried about us. And then slowly he raised his eyes and looked at us. And then he just moved off again gracefully down the riverbank and disappeared. And that was my first sighting of jaguar, and it's, you know,
but you've
indelible.
Been looking for him for a while.
Two and a half years.
Two and a half.
Yeah. Along the Jaguar Corridor, which is a piece of land that unites ecologically important jaguar landscapes across a swath of 5,000 latitudinal acres. So it's huge. It has to be managed as a single ecological unit. It goes from the northern Argentina, the Iberá, to southern Arizona. And it's because the jaguar is the only large, wide-ranging species without a subspecies. So there are no taxonomic differences between jaguars in the Amazon and the Pantanal in northern Mexico. There are mild superficial differences, but so that jaguar corridor has to be run as a single ecological unit.
And that is relatively new science, too, about the jaguar genus and species.
Yeah.
Is that up until, I believe, like you write, the 1990s, they thought there were all these different kinds of jaguars, but it's really just one species
One species of jaguars.
In 5,000 miles of...
Right. And that was a historic discovery.
And it changed conservation efforts for this animal.
It changed big cat conservation. It changed perhaps conservation in general.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was really a momentous discovery.
So as you followed in the path of Rabinowitz and you looked at his work and how that has led to the conservation efforts today, what do you see in terms of protecting the America's largest cat? What's being done and what needs to get done?
Oh, man, it's really complicated. The jaguar in the past 50 years has lost half its range. There are big infrastructure projects happening. There's industrial agriculture. There's the border wall. And then there's the ghastly international trade in jaguar parts. So the jaguar is up against a lot. And the kind of Pantanal model it's few and far between. But most jaguar biologists who've studied jaguars for a long time believe that the jaguar is resilient enough, adaptable enough, and tenacious enough to survive and maybe even thrive. And Alan Rabinowitz used the phrase, he called them adaptable, but he said they had the audacity to survive. So that it's really a huge thing. And there's something called the 2030 roadmap that's very, very important. All the environmental organizations are participating in that. They're trying to create 30 more jaguar conservation units, which are the jaguar strongholds, and they're trying to connect corridors, many more corridors, by 2030.
What about the jaguar's impact on farming and cattle and human population? And I believe this is part of what you write where one of the Leopold family members steps in to say what they've observed.
Yeah, the Leopolds are just amazing to me. They always, always appear. So this is Starker Leopold, and he wrote a book called The Wildlife of Mexico. And he writes a lot about jaguars, and he pretty much says that jaguars prey on 85 different species, and the only time they really kill cattle is when there's an old injured jaguar, and he takes cattle. One biologist said it was like going to Burger King and eating a Whopper for a jaguar because it's that easy for them to kill, to kill a cow, but. So Starker Leopold said that cattle were really not part of the jaguar prey template. They eat everything from frogs to skunks to armadillos to caiman. And sometimes they'll eat cattle. And, of course, the ranchers across the jaguar range are concerned about cattle.
Sure.
But there are depredation funds established. And with good cattle management, they can prevent that.
And Starker Leopold is one of the first to argue that, hey, they're not going to have that kind of an impact that you'd expect. And there are very few, if any, contemporary cases of jaguars attacking humans?
No, again, the humans are not part of their prey
template.
Well,
why wouldn't they attack humans? We would seem to be, to some degree, a good meal.
Yeah, right. There's almost no record. So there have been man-eating lions, man-eating tigers,
sure,
man-eating
bears.
Leopards, but there's no record of a man-eating jaguar. They don't attack people unprovoked.
Is there a case to be made, James Campbell, about natural selection that the bold, the brave, and the out jaguars were eliminated population-wise, and what was left were the ones who would slink through the night, who were very weary of humans and try to stay away?
Absolutely. I mean, you think of Lewis and Clark, and when they wrote about grizzly bears.
Yes.
They wrote about grizzly bears attacking them, and they put 12 musket balls into an attacking grizzly. But eventually, the grizzlies that survived were the grizzlies that knew how to hide, the grizzlies that moved from, the plains into the remote mountains. Those are the grizzlies that survived.
Yeah.
There was something called the jaguar tigreadas, when every jaguar had a bullseye on its back. And 180,000 jaguars were killed in Brazil alone in just over a decade. But what happened is the jaguars that survived were the jaguars that became more secretive, more elusive. So there
wouldn't call it natural selection. It's almost like selection by human interference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's a really good point.
James Campbell, our guest, he is the author of the new book, Heart of the Jaguar. You probably know some of his previous works like Braving It, The Final Frontiersman, The Ghost Mountain Boys, and The Color of War. All of them have been featured in one way or another here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you have a question for our guest, we welcome you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. What did indigenous cultures think of the jaguar?
Oh, they worshiped the jaguar. It was incredibly important to their art, their architecture, their iconography, their mythology, their religion. I think in the book that metaphysically there was no more important animal to the essentially the southern people. The southern people worshiped the jaguar. Northern, say, Native American tribes worshiped the grizzly bear. Mm-hmm. So it was vital to them. For instance, the Maya believed that the jaguar protected the sun on its journey from day to night and back to day. That was the jaguar protector. And the Olmecs believed, the Olmecs of essentially the Yucatan in Mexico, believed that their ruling class the people of the ruling class were descended from the jaguar.
Kind of like Black Panther.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
What could I do, James Campbell? You're a Wisconsin author, you're from Lodi. But you have taken a stake in the future of the jaguar population in the Americas. If I, as a cat lover, would like to join you in this cause, what role can I play from here?
Well, there are a number of different big cat organizations. Panthera is the group that I primarily worked with, but there's the Wildlife Conservation Society. There's a number of other big cat groups that you can contribute money to, and there's some citizen science programs also.
Really?
That people might be interested in. Yeah.
Citizen science that I could participate in from here?
Yeah, well, no.
Okay.
Not from here. You could help set camera traps in southern Arizona, in the Sky Islands of southern Arizona, where there is a jaguar roaming right now named Cochise.
Cochise.
And periodically there is a jaguar in southern Arizona. So what they have is the University of Arizona set up this camera trap network throughout southern Arizona. So many people participate in that.
Is there any talk about restoring jaguar populations to the Arizona area? That's part of the corridor, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and I mean, once upon a time, up until probably 1850, there were jaguars in southern Colorado, in California, in West Texas.
It's almost hard to believe.
Yeah, we waged, as this man named Dan Flores wrote in American Serengeti, we waged a war of extermination against our predators. Yeah. The jaguar being one of them, of course, the wolf.
But the jaguar wasn't our predator.
Right. So... the jaguars are a cosmopolitan species. You know, they can live in the Amazon jungle. They can live in the Pantanal. They can live in the desert. They can live in the high mountains. In Arizona, there's a photo of a jaguar in the Huachuca Mountains standing in 6 inches of snow.
What?
They're incredibly adaptable animals.
That is, from the deserts, the snow, and all points in between, the rainforest,
right.
You name it.
I was in southern Bolivia in the Gran Chaco Forest, which is parched, brittle country, and jaguars thrive in that environment.
It just amazes me. And you go through we meet a number of these jaguars by name in your book, The Heart of the Jaguar. But with the time we have left, James, tell us about the one jaguar that sticks out in your mind and you know, why it stays with you today.
I think probably a very small female jaguar named Sophia. I was in the Brazilian Pantanal participating in a capture and collaring program. And this went on for about 10 days, 10 sleepless days and nights. And on the final night, we captured this female jaguar. And the protocol for taking care of a captured jaguar is really, really intense. I mean, it's almost a sacred act for these biologists.
And that's the way you write about it, is how, and the previous, you talk about how some of the earlier attempts to, you know, tag these jaguars led people to question whether or not they were helping or hurting these animals.
Yeah, definitely. In there was a time when that was a valid question, but losing a jaguar today from trapping and from trapping one is almost unheard of. I spent a lot of time in the Brazilian Pantanal with a guy named Joaris May. He's the world's leading jaguar trapper. He's trapped more than 110 jaguars. And he was the one who trapped this female jaguar named Sophia. And eventually they laid her on the tailgate of a truck. And then they have to do all kinds of various tests. And then what they told us was then we could touch the cat. And They took us through the whole protocol the first night, and then they reinforced that night after night after night. But never had they told us, had they told me about how emotional that experience would be to touch, you know, to touch a spotted cat, mm-hmm. a living thing. Mm-hmm. And I put my hand over its belly and felt it breathe. And I was just so close to it. It was really emotional.
Yeah. Sophia, you write about it. Was that the first tagging that you did of a
jaguar? That was the first and only tagging
that
I did.
Just to pull it all together here, you mentioned how George Schaller was the mentor for Alan Rabinowitz.
Yeah.
And his lifelong friend, as you write, was Howard Quigley.
Yeah.
And it was Howard Quigley that invited you out to the Pantanal to do that tagging.
And Howard Quigley studied under A. Starker Leopold at Berkeley. So the Leopold surface again. And of course, Aldo Leopold wrote a lot about jaguars, too.
I'm curious where you're at right now. James Campbell is a Wisconsin author who's been all around the world and has brought it all to us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. What's on your horizon? You got a next book cooking already, or are you?
I have a tough time staying put. Not that I don't love Lodi and I don't love Wisconsin. I love them both. But I consider myself kind of a boots on the ground author. Mm-hmm. I do not know what I'm going to do next, but I hope it takes me far afield.
What is the state of the jaguar population in the Americas right now?
Well, the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, estimates that there are two different estimates. One is that there's 60,000 jaguars left in the world. Another estimate is 170. Most jaguars believe that it is 60,000 jaguars, but 80% of those jaguars are in the Amazon mm-hmm. and the Brazilian Pantanal. And remember, the thing I always point out when people say 60,000 jaguars, that's a lot. 180,000 jaguars were killed in Brazil between 1963 and 1975 to service the fashion industry.
And as you write, some of that continues today with Chinese medicine.
Yes.
And the need to protect our animals from commerce that is questionable at best, an international trade that has very few protections for those who need it the most.
Yeah, the international trade, the rates of international trade in jaguar parts is alarming. And there are networks that go right from Bolivia, right from Paraguay, right from Panama, straight to China.
James Campbell, I want to thank you for sharing your stories with us and with Wisconsin Public Radio through the years. And needless to say, we're excited to find out what's next. But take your time with us and come back when you can.
I'm excited to find out, too. Thank you very much.
Pleasure's mine. James Campbell is the author of the brand new book, Heart of the Jaguar, The Extraordinary Conservation Effort to Save the America's Legendary Cat. Check it out when you can. Coming up next, Elaine Becker and Karen Mayhew join us to give us an update on gardening with sheep's wool. We featured them on Garden Talk last year on The Larry Mueller Show. We'll catch up with them in Argyle when we continue. Wondering how you can use wool in your garden? That story is next. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show.